from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is made in a passage from Isaiah 32:18. My people shall dwell in an oasis of peace. That seems to be a direct comment about human behavior and expectations. Believers reading this text would logically assume that God wants peace. And so the village of Neve Shalom, Wahat Asalam, was built on a hilltop overlooking the Ayalon Valley. And I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's midway between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. The purpose of the village, to demonstrate that two people of different, often conflicting religious backgrounds, can live side by side in harmony. The population of 236 includes Israeli Jews and Palestinian Israeli Arabs, among others. But now the world is watching ISIS, a group that claims to speak for the Islamic faith. They are violent, and they are proceeding to torture and kill as they try to gain power. They have been especially brutal to Christians. So how to make sense of violence in the name of religion? We welcome your questions this hour, and we're pleased to welcome a couple of guests in studio. Dr. Muhammad Shafiq is the executive director of the Brian and Jean Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue and a professor at Nazareth College. Dr. Shafiq, nice to have you.
Thank you very much.
Reverend Gordon Webster is the chairman of the Interfaith Forum of Greater Rochester, a board member at the Hickey Center, and has a long history, actually, with Neve Shalom Wahat Asalam. So we'll be talking about that. Reverend Webster, thanks for being here.
Good to be here, Evan.
And I wanted to start on that positive note, because most of us who had never heard of Neve Shalom Wahat Asalam wouldn't have that inspirational idea of faiths living side by side. But it's there. This is a real village. And Reverend Webster, is it working? How long has it been there?
The village was created out of a sense of destiny that was held by one man, Bruno Husar, who was born a secular Jew, grew up in Cairo speaking Arabic for the first 18 years of his life, went to school in Italy and then the Sorbonne, converted to Roman Catholicism and became a Dominican monk, did Christian-Jewish dialogue work in Jerusalem, and then had this sense that God wanted him to bring Arabs and Jews together to live. Arabs who are Muslim, Arabs who are Christian, and Jews, all Israeli citizens, on this hill overlooking the Ayalon Valley.
And when was the village of
1970s was the beginning of it. And by the early 1980s, they had built a primary school in which they are educating all of the children in all of the languages, all of their subjects, both in Hebrew and in Arabic. So they're learning everything in both languages, a Hebrew-speaking teacher and an Arabic-speaking teacher in every classroom.
And what has been your role there, Reverend Webster?
I've been active on the board of the American Friends of Neve Shalom Wahat Asalam, this oasis of peace village, as it's called in Arabic and Hebrew, for 10 years, and president for seven. I just left the presidency to my colleague on the West Coast, Judy Dubin.
And I assume, and as much as I've been able to read, no village, I mean, humans are still human. It's not perfect. But what sense do you get from being there and from the message of the village? Is it being lived out?
It is certainly being lived out. They've got a school for peace where they're bringing people in saying, we have to live together. And so we need to learn the ways of reconciling one another, the conflict management and conflict resolution skills, but even more, the fact that a Palestinian Arab who is Muslim has a perspective on the world that has a different narrative of world history than an Israeli Jewish person would have. And so the kids learn both narratives. They learn what it is that they look at as 1948. The Jewish members of the village celebrate the War of Independence. The Palestinian members of the village, Israeli citizens as they are, do not celebrate the War of Independence because that was the catastrophe. And so they've learned to have dialogue and to live around that. Sometimes they argue, but they still take care of each other's kids.
I don't seek to have any moral relativism or as little as possible, but I do think, and Dr. Shafiq, let me ask you, when we grow up only reading history as written by people of our own culture, our own faith, our own background, I think we risk understanding some of the perspective that others have. And this kind of coeducational setting, to me, seems so valuable in that way in bridging differences. What have you seen?
Well, this is very important. I have myself visited that place also, and I have been, I think, twice there. Mm-hmm. It's a good way, and I think it's a very valuable way to expose both Arab Christians and Muslims and Israelis children together, to learn together and to grow together. And that's a very good way. In fact, misunderstanding happens when people are separate from one another. So that's a very valuable way of education. I hope that could spread all over in that area. And I think Oasis of Peace means to give opportunities to people to know, to understand, to dialogue, and build relations. And that happens through education.
But the cynic may say, this dream really began if it began 40 years ago or more, and yet the village is 250 people or less, and we still see strife. We see it in more stark terms than ever. And the cynic may say, it's a beautiful oasis, but it's more of a mirage than a reality. What would you say, Dr. Shafiq?
Well, I think the political and other interests which are there are more stronger. I think attention has not been paid to that the values which are taught at that place, how much that is important and why we should incorporate it everywhere and why we should try to see that, that people grow together. I think that has not been, maybe different reasons are there at that part of the world, that why it has not been incorporated. And still I see it. It's a very small struggle. It's not growing struggle. So you need to understand why it is not growing. What is preventing that to grow? Certainly there could be political and other reasons for that.
What are the greater goals of this village? And certainly if the village is able to operate in harmony, that's a great point of pride and success. But are there tangible goals to try to spread this sort of a coeducational and community type living? Is that the long-term plan, Dr. Shafiq and Reverend Webster?
It certainly is a long-term plan to help journalists, both Palestinian journalists from the West Bank and the Gaza, insofar as that's possible, and Israeli journalists to learn to understand each other's perspective on the world. And the Israeli journalists, when they got together in the exchange program, said, we've got all the sources. We don't need to be meeting there. And the Palestinians were brought together with them in the village, and they discovered, well, we haven't thought about that in those sources. We don't have access to those sources. And so the Palestinian journalists were then given airtime in Israel, as a Jewish democracy, is really trying to be that democracy. Mm-hmm. And so that's just one of the projects. They are in network throughout the region and beyond the region. The head of the School for Peace basically says we cannot fail at what we're trying to do. Where there is an equal number of Palestinian Arabs and Israeli Jews living between the Mediterranean and the Jordan River. We can't fail at what we do. We need to live with each other. Far better that we live together in peace with justice than to live apart and continue to struggle as if we were each other's mortal enemies.
And the problems, in another perspective to that, the problems which you see in the modern world in the 21st century, on one hand you see terrorism growing. On the other hand, you see interfaith dialogue. So if you look into that, the technology has developed so rapidly that has brought the world together and shrink it together like we are all living in a boat. And now the world is readjusting to itself, identities, tribal identities, religious identities, cultural identities. That creates the whole, which we see the problems, including terrorism. That problem comes out of that. And if you look into interfaith dialogue, which goes against that, meaning that's not the way to go to extremes, but rather we need to dialogue, we need to coexist, we need to work together as people of different cultures and different religions. If you look into that, technology started to develop in a very high speed since 1990, and interfaith dialogue started, 1990, but after 2001, what happened after that? So these two forces are going together, and I think to bring peace, it cannot be brought through warfare. It cannot be brought through oppression. Peace is not that way. Peace is through education, meaning to give chances to interfaith dialogue, make the people together, bring them, having more and more discussions, open sacred texts, open different cultures, bring different tribes together so there could be mutual understanding. And that problem which they see that what is going to their future, they can be understanding that through education. So I believe, as we mentioned about the OSS of peace, very much that model through interfaith dialogue, we need to work on it. We need to be doing that as much as possible. And that is the way to make different trends which are emerging, extremist trends, violent trends, including terrorist trends in the world, how to counter that. And it would be through education and especially enhancing interfaith education.
I think that's a great point that a lot of our listeners are saying, yes, yes, yes. They want to see more of this. My guests for the hour, Dr. Muhammad Shafiq and Reverend Gordon Webster. And as Dr. Shafiq says, there has to be a way to counter the rise of these extremist groups that turn to violence. And we're talking about ISIS. First of all, they call themselves the Islamic State. Dr. Shafiq, are you offended by the appropriation of the term Islamic?
Oh, there? Very much, my friend. Thank you very much by bringing that. And I was just telling Gordon that, the word Islamic, the word Muslim, anything which happens, it is labeled as Islamic or Muslim. And that's putting the whole Muslim community into psychological depression sort of it. Oh, again, I give you police person when he was killed,
Daryl Pearson.
Unfortunately,
Officer Pearson.
We all prayed. It's a bad thing what happened. No approval to that. Nothing like that. But we all prayed. We wish that should not be a Muslim, because if the name is a Muslim, again, that is Islamic terrorism or Muslim terrorism. We do not apply this word to other communities at all. There are individuals, terrorists, maybe a Christian, maybe another faith, different things are there. But, whenever something happens, all of a sudden we say Islamic terrorism and Muslim terrorism. And that actually labeled the whole community and put the whole community. And also, you can see Islamophobia is increasing because the way the media portrays and common people, especially in the countrysides and others who have not reach out to Muslims and interfaith dialogue, they feel like all Muslims who has Muhammad name, name that is a Muslim name, would be a terrorist. And that's something, which we feel that how the media is continuously and constantly putting the word Islamic and the word Muslim ahead and putting the Muslim community and exposing the Muslim community to be,
This kind of unfair characterization.
Yeah.
It's just unjust.
Well, and we're going to get to your calls and your comments in a second here. And we have an email already from a listener that I think will help us frame some of the questions you may have. If you want to join the conversation about violence in the context of religion, the stark contrast between ISIS and the village we've been talking about, Neve Shalom Wahat HaSalam, that stark contrast and how we can get the world to move in the direction of Neve Shalom Wahat HaSalam and away from ISIS, that's part of the conversation this hour. If you want to join it, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Let me ask our guests, should the media use another term? This is an organization that calls itself ISIS or ISIL, and they appropriate that term Islamic. Do we have a choice? Do we refer to it as something else?
Have a choice. I think we do not call it Islamic. As far as I'm concerned personally, I don't call that Islamic State. So you can qualify that while they call themselves Islamic, the overwhelming majority of the Muslim community would not consider them Islamic at all.
How do you refer to them?
This is a new terminology which has been adopted. It's actually abbreviation, ISIL or ISIS is abbreviation of the word Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, Islamic State of Iraq and Lebanon. That's the abbreviation of that. And it has been used in the beginning, which they do, and then after that they started to use the word caliphate, actually. They didn't use that word, and then they used the word caliphate. But whatever it is, such horrible acts which these people are doing would never be called Islamic. This is not what Islamic religion. Islamic religion, if you see, it built great civilizations. Civilizations where Jews, Christians, Muslims, and Hindus and Buddhists lived together for centuries. You know, you can look into India, you can look into Spain, you can look into Baghdad, the great dialogue which happened in those areas in the medieval period. So this is not to hate one another. In fact, you mentioned that the Christians are in danger under these people. It's not only Christians. The Muslim's life is in danger also.
Every person
who is a peace-loving, who wants to coexist, his life or her life is in danger. That's why the peace-loving people, all of them are trying to get out of that because they don't want to be in that situation. So it's a terrible situation, and I think we need to look into it deeply, how this has been caused, why such groups comes into being, and what are the ways and means that we can block their influence and we can put them to be squeezed and finally that they give up such actions which they are doing. So I think we need to look into the causes of that, how these things happen, why it happened. It should not happen in the world at all, whether Muslim, whether Christian, whether Jewish, whether Hindu, Buddhist, or whether it's a believer or a not believer. All humanity, how they can live in peace.
We just heard on television last night that the king of Jordan, answering the same kind of question, Evan, basically said, I do not recognize these folk in any way related to my religion. They are barbaric in what they do. The videotapes that they send out are showing criminal behavior. I do not consider them Muslim, much less part of the great religion of Islam. And there are many people who will try to do fear-mongering and to try and connect all of Islam with the actions of this group that Muslim leaders are now disavowing.
Well, let me ask, and we're going to get to your phone calls in just a moment, but here's an email from Richard. He writes, quote, I'm concerned that the millions of peaceful Muslims have not risen up to shout down ISIS and others who kill in the name of religion. Yes, Christianity did terrible things in a similar fashion centuries ago, but that violence has largely been replaced by peace. Why don't we see massive demonstrations in the Muslim world speaking out against ISIS? Again, that's an email from Richard. Dr. Shafiq, how would you answer it?
You know, it's very, very true how the mainstream Muslims have not yet reacted to that or how they are reacting to it. I mean, the media may not be taking it, but there is a lot which is coming in Muslim media. There is a lot of reaction from the mainstream. You can look if you can look into different medias, including some of the Arab medias, some of the non-Arab medias, Asia, where Muslims are in majority, there is a large reaction to that. But there is another problem which I want to bring to your attention, is that when there is interference from another power, outside power, then the people, it's become difficult for the people how to react, whether it is a political issue, whether it is, that those people who are there, it is their issue. So that is also creating a problem, is because of colonialism, because of the post-colonial nature of that. When another country, foreign country, intervene, how the people become reluctant. And you can see the demonstration in Iraq also the other day, which said, that demonstration said that it's another foreign country plot. So meaning that, what I'm suggesting here that we should leave it to those countries. The countries which are there, which is Syria, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, the Gulf countries, Egypt, they should come up with a plan. And then they could be helped. But that's their responsibility to come out. If they're not coming out, somebody goes from outside to intervene, then there could be different reasons for that. So that's their problem, and they need to resolve that problem. The other thing which I was bringing also, these states which are there, they need to bring their reforms also, because there is poverty, there is exploitation, there is oppression. They need to bring reforms to isolate ISIS of what they are saying. At the same time, they need to come up with a solution also.
And Reverend Webster, I'm assuming that the email from Richard, I don't know, he may be Christian, he may not be, but what do you say to people of your faith who say, look, this is up to Muslims to show us that they don't think this is right. They have to do more here. And we do hear that sentiment a lot. What do you say, Reverend Webster?
Sure. I've committed my life to human cooperation, dialogue, the development of mutual respect. I am 100% with Mohammed Shafiq in his understanding of education and interfaith dialogue as necessary. A Christian theologian teaches, in fact, has created the beginnings of discussion worldwide, including the Muslim communities of the world, which represent a billion and a half people and more, to create a global ethic that guides all of us, Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, Sikhs, Jains, Shintos, the Chinese communities, everybody, that we have an obligation to one another to live on this planet, which is ours to live on. And if we're going to destroy each other, we're going to call each other into question, we're going to fearmonger, we're going to label one group of humanity as the devil as opposed to another, we aren't dealing with reality. The reality is we must succeed in having cooperation with one another and working together. It is ironic that on the field of battle now in the middle of Iraq, which is gradually breaking up into three different areas as we speak, it's actually happening. Ironically, people from the military of Iran and people from the military of the United States are on the same side working in that military, and the reports are coming out from the U.S. Marines. They're coming out daily, that this irony has been created by this fear and this power versus power mentality that creates situations where no child should be raised.
Yeah.
We've got the children of Nevi Shalom Wahat al Salam being raised in peace, even while there is still the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the latest example being with Gaza. But the fact is, we want a place for raising our children. And as grandparents, we know that we do not want to go out leaving this world in a place where fewer and fewer places where you can raise your children in peace so that they can enjoy the fruits that God has created on this earth.
All right. Before we get to the phones, last question for Dr. Shafiq. Just to follow up to Richard's point, if there is a lack of demonstrations, street demonstrations against the terrorist organization known as ISIS, is it a mistake for Christians or Jews or non-Muslims to believe that that indicates that the Islamic world supports or is indifferent about?
Oh, no. You know, when this happened, ISIS name came up, the Muslim organizations in Washington, D.C., all came and did press conference.
Yeah.
You know, the main Muslim organization, and rejected and condemned what ISIS was doing. So the Muslims are there. We have given continuous sermons on that, what is happening, condemning all of that. There is no lack of that. But see, in America, the American media carries what they hear in their own way. It does not carry all the news which are there, you know, especially the news which coming from Muslims in America as well as overseas. If you look into, I have spoken this before also, if you look into our world news, it just goes 3 minutes and after that goes back to American news. Contrary to that, you look at Al Jazeera. It goes in detail and you can see hear both pro and con issues there. You look into BBC, you hear also more of word news there. So I think we, as our media is concerned, is not giving proper education. Muslims are part of this country, especially American Muslims. They are very much there, and they are, you know, and they are doing their best what they can do here. And similarly, Muslims everywhere, you see, humans are human. No human being wants to live in insecurity, you know. Nobody likes that. Nobody wants to live in an area where there is turmoil, where there is killing. That's against human nature, any human being. In fact, this is against animal natures also. Most of the animals like to stay in peace. So you can see human being is an intellectual being. And I think giving chances to things and educating people slowly and gradually, things will happen in the best way. And especially we are concerned here in America that the Muslims' news has to come in American major media, at least that Americans all together, including Muslims, see that we are on the same platform. We are working together as one people, trying our best how to stand against any type of violence.
Reverend Webster, one more quick comment on that?
I just think that the principle that there will be no peace between nations until there's peace between the religions. And there's not going to be peace between the religions until there's dialogue between the religions. And that's what we are doing at the Hickey Center at Nazareth College. It's what we're doing with the Interfaith Forum. It's what we're doing with the Interfaith Alliance of Rochester. That's what's happening between Muslims and Jews in a Muslim and Jewish dialogue in this community. We are committed to doing the opposite, the absolute opposite of what the people in this so-called ISIS are doing.
We're going to take the shortest break in radio and come right back with our two guests for the hour. You're hearing from Reverend Gordon Webster, the chairman of the Interfaith Forum of Greater Rochester. Dr. Muhammad Shafiq is the executive director of the Brian and Jean Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue at Nazareth College. Looking at the phone lines, Mukhtar, Bruce, Rick, David, you're all coming next here. So let's take that short break and come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, can you trust online review sites like Yelp? Some restaurant owners say the popular review site is engaging in extortion, pushing bad reviews for restaurants that won't spend advertising dollars. Yelp says it's not true, and it sparked a wider conversation about which voices are reliable when it comes to reviews. We dig into the democratization of reviewing next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Wealth Strategies Group at Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, offering financial planning strategies that are tailored to clients' needs. Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, investing in you.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A brief note before we hit the phones. Dr. Shafiq mentioned Al Jazeera, which is certainly more widely available now than it's ever been for Americans. And for the Americans who routinely criticize Al Jazeera, I suspect most who criticize it haven't seen more than 5 minutes of it. And I think it should be said, criticism's okay, but let's make sure we open our minds to sampling news, listening, reading other sides, et cetera, before we criticize. Everybody here agree?
Let the criticism be informed criticism opposed to uninformed criticism.
Yeah, that's well said. All right. First phone call is from Mukhtar in Rochester. Thanks for calling Connections. You're on the air. Are you there, Mukhtar?
Let me just say this. As Muslims, okay, we totally repudiate the behavior of these people who are calling themselves ISIS or whatever they want to call themselves. There's nothing in Islam that endorses that type of behavior. That type of behavior is barbaric and has nothing at all to do with Islam. Second thing, let me just say this also. These people is well known in the Islamic world. They are called Khawarij. Khawarij is spelled K, if I have it correctly, it's spelled K-W-A-R-W-A-I-J. Okay, these people are troublemakers.
Yeah, Khawarij, we call it in Arabic.
Exactly, yeah. Khawarij. Okay, these people have been spoken about over 1,400 years ago by our beloved Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. Okay, so these type of people are well known. They're nothing new to Islam. Okay? They come around every so often, and these are the type of things they do. They create havoc wherever they go, and they do everything to try to get people to come on their side, okay, with their rhetorics and so on and so forth. So please, please, don't pay these people. Don't spend time wondering why they do the things they do. We know why they do the things they do. Okay, so I would suggest, lastly, for anyone who's interested, read up about the Khawarij in Islam, the history of the Khawarij.
In English, they call it Kharijites. In English, Mukhtar, they call it Kharijites. So it's a book, yes.
Exactly. So read up on these people, and you will get a total picture of who these people are.
Right.
That's all I have to say.
Thanks
Thank
for
you
the call,
very
Mukhtar.
Much.
And Dr. Shafiq, go ahead.
Thank you, Mukhtar. This is really accurate what you said, is that it is sort of, you know, those people who came in that early time and how they were confronted by Muslims themselves. You see, this is very important. There was no other power to interfere, but the mainstream Muslim stand against those Kharijites and, you know, and how they were put to down. So that's the phenomena, and that's what I think the question is coming, why the mainstreams are not standing up to put them down, and what are some of the reasons for that? And also different areas which could be discussed in this, how really to make sure that this type of people who are there, the ISL, ISISL, don't have, you know, don't do things which they're doing there.
Reverend Webster brought a text for us. I think it's always great to get recommended readings from people, especially religious leaders. And Reverend Webster, I'm looking at a book called Destiny Interrupted, A History of the World Through Islamic Eyes. Would you recommend it?
Absolutely would recommend it. What it does, the author says, think of this as me sitting across the coffee table from you, telling the story about the Muslim peoples from the beginning until today.
It is from a young man who is actually from Afghanistan, giving his own perspective also what happened to him and things like that.
Let's get back to the phones. This is Harold in Rochester, wants to talk about verses in the Quran. Go ahead, Harold.
Yeah, how do you do? I don't have an extensive list, but I've come across this one particular one. Says Quran 8:12, where it says that I will instill terror into the hearts of the unbelievers, smite ye above their necks, and smite all their fingers off. Can you comment on that?
Thank you very much on that. But you didn't read before that. It is referring to not referring to everything. It is referring to the fight with Quraysh, you know, who attacked on Muslims at Medina. And it is there that you stand up against them firmly. It is not referring, it's not a general verse. It is particular verse referring to that situation when the people of Mecca, when the Muslims were forced to migrate, to flee to Medina, and they got a safe haven there. And then still Meccans who were at that time were non-Muslims, who were idol worshippers, they went there to attack on the Muslims at Medina. And that is actually referring to that. If you want exact translation of that in the Bible, it is there. That such verses are there in the Bible.
I've got several other verses.
Right, I know.
Many sites that actually prove that the actual creation of Islam was actually...
If you want, we can have a quotation from the Bible also similar. It also depends, you are right, how some people...
Harold, put that ended.
Harold, hold on for a second. Let's let Dr. Shafiq respond. You stay on the line. We've got to have a dialogue here. Let's not talk over each other. Dr. Shafiq.
Harold, I do understand, and thank you very much. And, you know, such verses, you are very right. Some people take it and misinterpret that. And similarly, such verses in the Bible, some people take it and misinterpret it. So we, as scholars in each and every religion, whether it's a Jewish, whether it's Christian or Muslim, we need to re-look into it, how those people are taking it and why they are taking it and how to go back, what really those verses means and what is their context. So I think we need to look into the context. I don't deny that some people are not taking it wrongly.
Go ahead, Harold.
Okay, well, I understand that you must receive these things in context, but that several verses I've come across in my studies that very, very much bear witness to the fact that they feel it's just and right for the cause of the Muslim faith to eliminate anybody who pretty much opposes them.
Oh, no. You know that Muslims and Jews and Muslims, Christians, all, and Muslim Hindus have lived together in centuries. We have
okay,
so
well, also, that
great
also
heritage.
On the word Christian too, but I think if you do a little research and you'll find the deeper research, we'll discover that the hidden history of the Muslim faith actually goes back to the Rome.
All right, Harold, hold. Harold, thanks for the call. I think it, in some sense, it's a little condescending for Harold to tell Dr. Shafiq to do a little research, and I don't appreciate that tone. I do at least appreciate the point that Harold's making, is that people are confused about some of the passages, especially when you isolate a passage. Reverend Webster, I'll get you in, your response here in just a second. I just want to say that Harold is referencing, again, is it Surah 8:12? And yes, in my preparation for this broadcast, 9 years ago, some of the people who have become leaders in the terrorist organization that calls itself ISIS have been pointing to that phrase, strike over their necks, as a corollary to Surah 47:3. They are looking to use this as a justification to instill terror, again, cast dread into the hearts of unbelievers, and they have been essentially using it to justify decapitation of hostages. But Dr. Shafiq is saying that that passage is actually written in a very specific, narrow way, not generally for non-believers.
Right.
Yes?
And those who take it in general, we need to be very much there to make them understand that these are not general verses which refers to to fight against anybody who is not a Muslim.
We take a look at the Christian Bible, and we find in Joshua and we find in Judges absolutely horrific ways of human beings treating human beings. And some of those include ways that are instructed by God. It seems to me that if we're going to be ethical in the way we use our sacred texts, even more ethical in the way we use other people's sacred texts, is to be ethical in the way we choose how to talk about it. If we're going to talk about horrific texts in other people's traditions, we are, I think, being unethical. If we don't take a look at our own scriptures and find the same things and say to ourselves, these are things we don't need to be raising. This is not going to work to save the human race. This is not going to work to help us create the conditions in which we raise our children. This is fear-mongering, and we're trying to use religion to bless it.
Our guests for the hour, Reverend Gordon Webster, Chairman of the Interfaith Forum of Greater Rochester, Dr. Muhammad Shafiq, the Executive Director of the Brian and Jean Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue at Nazareth College, and we've got a lot more phone calls. I'm already seeing that we probably can't possibly get through everything this hour, which just means that this interfaith dialogue is just about as important as anyone we're having today. This is David in Rochester. David, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much for having Dr. Shafiq and Gordon Webster on. I really appreciate it. And one small comment I want to make is described cynic. And, of course, cynic is not a positive attribute. And I think in what is happening, I'd like to learn more about what the two gentlemen are doing, for it's in small steps. It doesn't have to be in the cynic looks of things happen in an epical like an epic. Those who really believe that change can happen do believe in things that can happen small, in small ways, but nevertheless just as significant. I would like to really hear more rather than, this mirror imaging of opinions about ISIS, about the real good stuff that they both are doing. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, David. Go ahead. We'd love to hear more.
We have been supporting in the American Friends of Neve Shalom Wahat Al Salam the work of the Spirituality Center that was inaugurated in 2006 in this Oasis of Peace village. And that Spirituality Center is there for the religious scholars of the Jewish people, the Muslim people, and the Christian people that live in Israel, Palestine. And poets come, and dancers come, and they have dialogue, and they have hard discussions, and then take a look at those hard discussions in the light of the values that they share. Those are the kinds of values that are incorporated in the global ethic that was passed by the World Parliament of Religions in Chicago in 1993, and the work continues on the development of that global ethic. Whether it is global or it is step-by-step, as you so beautifully put, we are about the business of hope. And it is a spiritual gift. It is also spiritual work. And so that Spirituality Center is critical to our not only meeting each other, understanding each other, doing deep research about each other, but listening to each other's hearts. What is it that the heart is yearning for? And if we have hope and we instill that hope in one another, then we have partners for building peace, as opposed to the kind of discussion where we end up being cynics and worse.
David, as interfaith leader, as you are and we are all together, we have, I think, three types of responsibilities. One is in Rochester. This is our city. This is our place we are living. I think our most important responsibility towards that is to have programs and to have to bring people of all, whether they have faith or no faith, together to have a mutual understanding, to make really Rochester a Oasis of Peace, a place which is really could be called a Oasis of Peace. And we call Rochester also as a model city for interfaith dialogue. So that's our first obligation. What programs we can develop together, I think you can look into the Hickey Center program, what we do for the next generation, like 500 to 600 students coming every year from high schools. Other programs we do, train the trainer for business people, others. So we need to have to look into that, what we need to do more, how to really make Rochester as a model city for coexistence, cooperation, and living together in peace. Then the national responsibility comes. What is our, as Rochester cities, living in Rochester, what is our responsibility to the nation and what programs we can initiate together? And similarly, international programs. I think you have seen the Hickey Center now doing conferences on sacred text, human context, bringing, which was raised before also from the sacred text, what are those areas which divide us? What are those areas which are uniting us? How we can promote this area and the sacred text which unites humanity and to expand? So that was our second conference. Third conference is coming. Books will be published also. And I think you know that the Hickey Center is very much involved on international level, also reaching out, how to be able to isolate those people who, whether they are Muslims or whether they are anyone in the whole Christians, African, Asian, in the whole world, who is creating problems in the world, to isolate them. And to isolate them is through educational process, through bringing people together, interfaith education, and things like that. That's a work which has to be done. And, and so how we can continue to work together, certainly you can see interfaith dialogue is still a baby. It's about 13, 14 years old, and I think it is getting grounds, and hopefully together we can bring a positive change. Oasis of Peace, that's our dream, and hopefully together we can make some difference into that.
And you heard Dr. Shafiq mention high school students, people who are young and perhaps more willing to bridge across differences in the next generation. Bruce in Honey Eye Falls wants to talk about exactly that. Thanks for calling, Bruce.
Yes, well, thank you for another wonderful program. You bring great speakers together again for a great dialogue.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks.
My son Brennan was a beneficiary.
Oh, yes,
of Dr.
yes. He's my ideal also. You know, I praise him everywhere when I go. Yes, thank you.
Brennan is a great kid.
Yeah. Well, thank you. But this, you know, the heart that he has is really just influenced by people like you, and it was a joy to see him work all summer to bring an interfaith group together at Asbury for a interfaith conference on a Wednesday night in August, and that was the height of his summer. I see a lot of hope in young people, and what you're doing is very just unbelievably wonderful to try to bring people together. So I just want you to continue doing that, and maybe speak again to how you're bringing young people in. I see a lot of hope in their attitudes about wanting to have interfaith dialogue and really wanting to make a difference in the world. And Brian's now down at American University International Studies
doing
the same thing. But
in fact, I recommended him to go there.
Yeah, but thank you for what you're doing. That's what I wanted to say. Thank you
very
much.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for the call. And again, you should have seen, Bruce, the way our panel brightened when they mentioned, you know, these young people who, frankly, we need this. We have a generation now, and we can go outside of religious faith. I tend to look at high school students now. They don't see differences in many ways the way older generations of Americans did. At least maybe I'm being hopeful, but that's sort of where I'm coming from.
I want to give you two things here. One is that the Hickey Center has produced a good number of young people who are now the future leaders of Rochester and Interfaith Dialogue and elsewhere also, working in universities from these programs which we do, the Next Generation Program. Actually, Next Generation Program we started in summer as a summer camp since 2004. And that produced good leadership. That was actually, those leaders were recognized by the Council of Council of Churches of Greater Rochester Area also. Second thing is that, which is most important, is the work which we do has everlasting consequences also. You know, you never know how these young people will be tomorrow and what they will contribute tomorrow. So this is a very positive note, what we are doing at the Hickey Center.
We just began last week the planning for the fifth Global Citizenship Conference at Nazareth College in March, and we are expecting between 500 and 600 high school students to be a part of this. And those who created, I mean, this actually was an idea that was created by a young Muslim student at Brighton High School.
And a young Jewish student.
And a young Jewish student.
At Brighton.
And they partnered, asked the high school principal if they could have an interfaith club. And she was enthusiastic about it and has become a very, very good friend of the Hickey Center. That high school student, those two high school students are now doing interfaith work in their colleges. One of those colleges is the University of Rochester, and we have great hopes for the interfaith work that's being done at the University of Rochester as well.
Yeah. Gordon, I have another example to bring to it. You know, now we are trying to bring as many schools from the countryside as possible. And in fact, last time we decided to bring at least four more schools from the countryside. And so there were two schools participated in the last year Global Citizenship Conference. And I received letters from one school. And those letters said, these are the young high school students who are saying, in our life, we have never seen a color person before. In our life, we have never seen a person who is of other religion sitting right there with us on the table and talking to us. That's amazing, and how we can really bring a true diversity and understanding of diversity.
Yeah, that is remarkable. And as Dr. Shafiq said, the notion of interfaith dialogue at all is still in its relative nascent period. And imagine that interfaith clubs in high schools. Imagine a future where that's common. Here's an email from Eric, and I've been trying to edit it down. It's a long one, but Eric said, I'm so proud of both of your guests this hour. It gives me hope for peace for the future, but I am an atheist, and even if I can accept the fact that the calls for violence in religious texts are out of context, my concern is that these texts will always be in danger of being corrupted. What do you think?
I think that when we're talking about the common good of humanity, an atheist, and I have several friends who are atheists, who are people that are humanitarian, people who care about justice, people who care about creating the space to raise our children. And we need to search for ways to interpret our texts, whether they're sacred or they're national or they're global, as the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is global, in ways that serve those values. And so we have conversations with the high school students in the workshops that include atheists, humanists, and agnostics as part of that conversation about how we in humanity are going to leave a better world for our children.
Dr. Shafiq?
And Eric, you are very right. You know, those verses will be always taken, whether from Bible, whether from Vedas, or from Quran, or from any sacred text, will be misinterpreted. But, you know, one thing which is happening after 9/11, especially in reference to Quran, which I read a lot, now the women are translating the Quran, the others are translating. I mean, there has been a lot of translations of the Quran is coming, a lot of commentaries are coming on it. So on the positive angle, because people are realizing now how those verses from the Quran, especially in referring to Quran, has been misinterpreted by some people and reinterpreting them in their own context. So I think there is positive, there is awareness. This awareness, interfaith dialogue is part of that awareness, but we need to bring more of this awareness. As I said, we have come, this is a global world. Technology has rapidly progressed. Religions have not progressed that rapidly. So we are caught up in a shock. I think we will come out of it, whether it's believers or non-believers. whatever the humanity overall will work together to come out of it. And that's my belief, and I think we need to, whether we are from one faith or we are not from a faith, all together as human beings, we need to stand together to come out of that.
Here's Pope Francis speaking this weekend. Quote, "Let no one consider themselves to be the armor of God while planning and carrying out acts of violence and oppression." A good reminder from Pope Francis. Again, if you just tune in here, the text we mentioned this hour, Destiny Disrupted, A History of the World Through Islamic Eyes by Tamim Ansari, a book that both of our guests say would be certainly an interesting and eye-opening read. And then for me, and you can find it easily on Google, just look up Neve Shalom Wahat As-Salam, a hilltop village in the Ayalon Valley, midway between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, a place of relative harmony in a world that right now feels a little volatile. But thank you to our guests this hour, Reverend Gordon Webster, Dr. Muhammad Shafiq. And if anyone wants to get in touch with the Hickey Center with questions about interfaith dialogue, how do they do that?
Just call the Hickey Center, which is 585-389-2963. That's direct to me. Or you can call the college and they will direct the telephone either to me or to the Jane Cates is working there as administrator. To one of us. So we will be there. We will, any email, if you want to email us, interfaith@nas.edu, we will reply to you, whatever your question or concerns are.
Thank you. And let's come back soon and bring some of these students, some of these high school students. I love these positive stories. Thank you for the hope for this hour. Thanks to both of our guests. Short break, right back on Connections.